A soggy Wednesday afternoon. Frank Sennett will be along a little bit later. He is at Cranes, of course, and talks about some of the things they are writing about. One of them, you know, it seems like more and more lately we're talking about this stretch of Michigan Avenue between Randolph and, well, north to the Chicago River, and how it is really starting to take off. The latest story involves the Hard Rock Hotel, which is closing, or changing anyway, into something a little bit new, a little bit more chic. So we'll talk to Frank about that, about big plans for Oak Street Beach as well. Philip Weiss from Seyfarth Shaw at Work will be along a little bit later to talk about, you know, this rash of sexual misconduct allegations against people in tech and how that's trickling down to businesses around the country as well, and his advice to business leaders when it comes to that. But we start on Wednesdays with Terry Savage, who writes, of course, for Tribune Media, terrysavage.com. She's here every week, just about everywhere. And, well, sadly, she's in a rowboat today because of the strong winds and the high rain, but we can talk to her on the phone. Terry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
I'm not flooded out, but nearly. And the noise you hear in the background is the thunder, and it must be happening outside the studio, too.
Wow, so, yeah, another round.
Are we soggy enough yet?
It's pretty amazing how much rain we've gotten, and we're in line for more storms tonight. The Dow's up about 120 points. Is that because of what Janet Yellen had to say before House Committee today?
You know, in the middle of all our worries about weather and our worries about the state of Illinois, the Dow's hit a record high this morning. What Janet Yellen said reassured the market. She said, hey, we don't have to raise rates too much more to get back to what we call normal. And we're going to be very judicious about it. And we're not going to be too tough on the economy if we don't see inflation coming. And the market chose to say, oh, well, that's all good news. So now you have stocks higher. Stocks higher because, you know, where else are you going to put your money? If you put your money in money market accounts, you don't get paid. If you put it in bonds, you worry about prices falling as rates do eventually rise. So the stock market is the magnet for money.
Tell me about the wind down of their bond portfolio and why we should be concerned about that, what it might mean for us.
Well, the way the Fed puts money into the economy. And if you go back to 2008, 2009, when they were, quote, pumping money into the economy, it used to be the Fed would go out into the giant Treasury bill and Treasury note bond markets, our national debt. At the time, it was only about $14 trillion. And they would go in the open market and buy Treasury bills, bonds, and notes, and pay for them with newly created money. I used to joke, you know, nobody asked the Fed chairman to put her driver's license number on the back of a check. So they'd buy this stuff and give the banks really essentially a check of new money that went into the system. Well, so they built up a big portfolio of all the things they bought. And in 2008, 2009, they didn't stop at buying Treasury securities. They bought mortgage-backed securities. They bought a lot of things the Fed has never gone into the market to buy before, sucking up these IOUs and paying with newly created money. So now they got a big portfolio. Of course, some of those are maturing. They don't have to worry about what to do with them. They just mature and go off the books. But what they really want to do is take the money out of the economy now, tighten things up a bit. So they will sell some of these securities starting later in this year. And when they receive payment for their sales, so they sell securities, so they get a check from the buyer, the Fed just, quote, tears up that check and puts it in the wastebasket, and that's money out of the economy.
Okay, and so that's why we watch that and the impact there.
Yeah, they've been busy buying and buying for years. Now they've got this whole, you know, portfolio. Now they're going to start selling it off and sucking the money out.
The Illinois Department of Revenue sent out a notice to businesses that the income tax hike is real. It's kicking in, and that they need to start collecting that. They sent it out to HR departments around the state yesterday. And here is CNBC with a survey out of the 50 states and how they rank for, let me get the America's top states for business. That matters. I'll tell you in a minute why. America's top states for business. Now, and I know you know, because we've talked about it off the air a little bit, but Illinois ranks 31 there. I don't think anyone wants to be 31 out of 50, but I think a lot of us, I was a little surprised to see that we were, hey, 31 out of 50.
Yeah, we're not as bad in some regards as we might think we are. I mean, the worst state is West Virginia with its coal revenues and jobs
right
disappearing.
Hawaii's
amazingly
in the bottom 10.
So it matters how they rank these things, because the second worst state, which I don't think you're going to get a lot of agreement from our listeners, is Hawaii.
Right.
It's primarily ranked badly because of their cost of living, and they don't have a very intelligent, tech-savvy, let's put it that way, workforce. Mississippi is the third worst, and Alaska, which has no access to capital and a really bad economy, is fourth worst. So we are the 31st from the top, the
right.
best states. That's not really so horrible, but it's not great. And here are some of the categories. So you'll see that we're on a downtrend for next year for sure. On the positive side, we have an excellent workforce, and they rank the, especially in technology, STEM jobs. We have pretty good infrastructure. And boy, I love the story about Lakeshore Drive. We have no money, but we're planning to do
It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be so nice.
However, do we have a competitive tax climate? Now, that is about to change dramatically on the downside. Our utility costs is one way they rate states. Wages. Fiscal health is a key indicator, and that includes the credit rating and all the things that go along with it. You know we've got a downward bullet on that. Quality of life, including crime statistics, I don't see how you can rate us highly on that.
We get 20. And they gave education. They gave us 27th in quality of life. And speaking of what you said, so economy. Last year we tied at 34. This year we're at 45. I said the wording mattered, top states for business, because in their category of business friendliness, we are tied for 47th. So we're not that friendly to business, even though we might be good for business. It's an improvement. We were 48th last year. But what we do really well is access to capital. You know, the cash is here. We do well with technology and innovation. And so those are the sorts of things that bring us up. So I don't know. I just thought it was maybe not quite a pick-me-up, but maybe not a kick-me-while-I'm-down as either. The things maybe aren't
okay,
as bad as we think.
Glass half full, glass half empty. It just shows how businesses move. Now, we've had a lot of businesses moving into Illinois, but when their employees can't find jobs or good schools or have to pay high taxes, you can be sure businesses will think again. So we're not at the worst. We're not at the best, and we've got some things. All the things going on in our state, downstate, and in the city of Chicago particularly, which is home to so many Fortune companies that, and the small businesses that create jobs, things like education, things like taxes, property taxes, and crime matter a lot. And while we might not get dinged from last year to this year, you don't want to see us go into a downtrend on those key issues.
That's Terry Savage. By the way, she's got some ideas for how you can spend your summer vacation. It's her latest column at terrysavage.com. We'll talk about that coming up. Terry Savage is on a phone line, and her latest column has to do with maybe some summer checkups. But, Terry, before that, did you buy anything yesterday on Amazon Prime Day?
No, you know, it's the most interesting thing. I thought I should. I mean, I'm a
yes,
real user
exactly.
of Amazon. In fact, I bought Amazon stock so many years ago, not enough of it, of course. But when I realized that they sold more than books, so you know how far back that is.
Yeah.
And I'm a major reader on my Kindle app on my iPad. So I looked yesterday, but I didn't see – I mean, it was just an excuse for shopping. There wasn't anything I particularly needed.
But you know what? You said you felt like you should. And I have to tell you, I had the same feeling – and I went and looked like, oh, what should I buy? I just think they've done an amazing job. So their number, you know, because they've just created it. I mean, they have just created this day. And it was huge. Their sales were up 60% from last year, surpassing the combined value of their Black Friday and Cyber Monday from last year. So yesterday alone, they created such a market that they passed those two big days from last year, the big day yesterday, I should say. It's a remarkable sort of social phenomenon.
That's exactly what it is, because those shopping days are associated with holidays that
right.
have been in existence since time immemorial. And this is just a brand new, there's a bargain hunt online kind of a day.
Right. It's like a Hallmark so holiday without the holiday.
Exactly. The holidays for Amazon, so.
Well, good for them. So, I don't know. I just, I've been kind of fascinated with that. And we did buy something in our house.
What'd you buy?
Well, Sharon, she had a Fitbit. I think it's a Flex. And lost it recently. And I'm like, hey, you want one. This is the day. So, I kind of pressured her, pushed her to buy it. So, you know, it had an impact on us. All right, there's
I
that.
I want to ask everyone out there. I always pride myself in being really trying to be near the lead in technology. I mean, I was the first to do online bill payment and so forth, and especially when it comes to financial technology. But the idea of having someone always listening to me in the room so I could call and say, go online and find me this, I can't, I don't know. I'm showing my stage.
I don't know what you're showing because, look, I'm showing my sort of impressionistness. Because yesterday afternoon, I'm telling Sharon, I'm like, I think we should get one. I think, shouldn't we have an Echo? Everyone has one. And I kind of looked at it, thought it through, and I'm with you. I just want to look up on my phone. If I want to know when the movie starts, I'll look it up.
Find it. A very young millennial or Generation Z or something like that to replace us both. And that's what we should have for your tech sector segment on the show. Yeah, Frank Sennett will probably know more about that.
Well, let's do.
I'm still focused on why doesn't anybody want to think about money during the summer? Half the people who are driving are going, okay, it was much more interesting to hear what your wife wanted to buy on Amazon than what I should do with my money. And I have, you know, I write a column every week. It's syndicated across the country. And as I sat down a few days ago to write this column, I thought, what can I write about? Nobody even cares about money in the summer. So I came up with five projects you should do. Pick one. Everybody pick one.
Yeah, because we don't have a lot of time left. But a couple of them are interesting in that. Well, they're all interesting, Terry. What the hell am I talking about? But one of the things is, you talk about appealing your property taxes, and there are specific windows for that, and this might not be the window, but I was interested because a lot of people talk about doing it on their own. We have Turbo Appeal, the guys from them. Bud Alshaw comes on from time to time. I like those guys. But you're talking about actually hiring a lawyer to maybe into a tax for you.
I have to tell you something. The smart money, the businesses, the wealthy people, you saw it with one of the gubernatorial candidates. I don't want to get political. They hire people, and a lot of those people are politically connected, and they get their property taxes reduced. I'm not saying that is the right thing, but I'm saying why should only the smart money do that? One of the other things I said is, you know, call your life insurance agent. Just make sure your beneficiary is correctly named. Maybe you need less insurance. You're older. Maybe you need more. You had a baby. Go online to a place like AccuQuote. If I had a dollar for every person that I said, well, what funds do you have in your 401k? They look at me and go, well, I don't know. I mean, a bunch of them. just take the statement from your 401k plan and just check either at the plan site if they give that to you or at Morningstar.com. Just check and see how well are they doing compared to their benchmark, if it's a growth stock fund or whatever it is.
It's a nice little checklist to get ahead, to work ahead a little bit on these slow summer days. Terry Savage, I appreciate your joining us today. And I'm not going to make another robot joke. What?
Okay.
We'll talk again next week.
Farewell.
Bye-bye.
All right.
I had the most lucky commute into work. Frank Sennett is on a phone line. Frank, of course, is and works at Crane Chicago Business and joins us to talk about what's there. And I want to talk to you, Frank, about plans for Lakeshore Drive. Well, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm a little disjointed. I started to say I had the most oblivious commute today. I got up, went to my health club about 5 in the morning. It had stopped storming. I saw there was a lot of water around. And I completely missed that there were more storms coming. So I just got in my car. And at about 6:30, just started driving downtown like a fool. And it turned out to be sort of in the donut hole of these two lines of storms. So I had a pretty easy commute. Had I taken the train like a smart commuter, I'm on the Milwaukee North Line, I might not still be here because they're shut down. So
absolutely. You were like Mr. Magoo walking on the girders.
Exactly.
Of the building.
I'm a real testament to being a know-nothing and benefiting from it. But you know what that's like.
So So if you're commuting on Lakeshore Drive in a few years, you may or may not notice a lot of big changes.
but there will be changes, right? They're committed to doing something. They just don't know exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah, and they're presenting some proposals. The city and states and the feds have all kind of put their heads together, and they're going to present some proposals on adding more lake fill and expanding and rebuilding the Oak Street Beach area into a big new park. It would be moved hundreds of feet to the northeast, and to the east of the beach, there'd be a big new park running more than a mile past North Avenue, and it would be bisected by the new and improved Lakeshore Drive.
Okay,
so big new urban footprint for recreation.
And are we convinced we need that?
My Oak Street Beach days are kind of over.
Right.
You know, the scene be seen days. They lasted about 2 days, I think, back in the late 80s.
There was the scene, you know, and then there was the Bassine day, those 2 days.
Those 2 days,
right.
Yeah. But, you know, the tourist trade seems to like to flock to Oak Street Beach and all the way up to North Avenue. That would be a pretty big expanse for, all those beach volleyball setup you see.
Well, you know, I guess my thought of it was it's kind of isolated. It's that strip, and it's not so easy to get to. And once you're there, there's not much. But that's what they're looking to fix. They want to make it much bigger so that there's much more to do once you cross Lakeshore Drive, I guess.
Yeah, and they want to put a potentially a formal pedestrian promenade from the Streeterville neighborhood straight to the beach, or a combined entrance for bicycles and foot traffic. And either way they go, though, the at-grade Chicago Avenue entrance to the drive under these plans would be replaced with an overpass. So for you commuters out there who go up and down Lakeshore Drive, one of those big two lights that, completely snarl traffic downtown, gone.
Yeah,
so that would be
nice.
Good news for commuters.
Yeah, so that's like at Chicago Avenue or places like that.
Yeah, Chicago Avenue, you know, we're coming out of the MCA area and the Northwestern Memorial Campus area. That in and out, that whole thing would be an overpass.
And I like that they are thinking big, but I didn't realize until I read this piece by Greg Hines, that they were actually talking about maybe were they talking about bus lanes under the lake, or what exactly were they looking at there?
Yeah, so the parts of the plan that they decided were non-starters included some kind of express bus lanes underneath the lake, and also they think there's not enough room for a light rail line in the middle of the drive. So kind of the futuristic public transit options are not going to take place. But there may be, probably, I would guess, in this plan, one of the things putting forward is dedicated bus lanes. Now, whether that would mean an expanded Lakeshore Drive with a dedicated bus lane or fewer lanes for the rest of us
right.
who are driving, I don't know. But that's to be decided.
Well, it's interesting.
This concept is going to be rolled out this afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry. So what's going to come out this afternoon? They're not a final idea. But...
No, just this whole thing. They're going to talk about it. They're going to let people express their opinions at DePaul University Student Center at 2250 North Sheffield from 3 to 10.
All right, we're going to pack that house.
You know, if you want to go, yeah, let's all go after the show and tell them we want
a demon dog.
I want a flying car. Where are my flying cars?
Well, you know, something does. I like the fact that they're thinking ahead. That something needs to be done. Lakeshore Drive is 80 years old. I didn't realize they said that because of it. Now, it had to be much worse back in the S-curve days, but they say there are an average of 3 crashes on the drive a day. So. They need to sort of sort things out and make it a little safer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, they've slowed that speed limit down, but it doesn't seem to have actually affected
no.
the speed that people drive.
And
on.
It hasn't saved the trees, right? That was all about saving the trees in the winter.
Right.
Wasn't it? The salt?
That was the rationale. I do remember that.
Okay, let's go now to Michigan Avenue, because it seems like maybe it's been the two of us, but more and more I'm talking about this stretch of Michigan Avenue from the river south to Randolph, that there's kind of been a rejuvenation there. And now the Hard Rock Hotel, which was maybe a pioneer. I don't know if you can be a pioneer on Michigan Avenue, but it's being forced out for something a little more Tony.
Yeah, so the Carbide & Carbon building, that beautiful Art Deco landmark,
yeah.
It's been hosting the Hard Rock Hotel for 13 years, and now there's going to be a major renovation there, new identity, new management team, so if you want to fall asleep at a Hard Rock in Chicago now, you have to be like me and go to the Hard Rock Cafe right. on Ontario and pass out at the bar.
Been there, done that. Okay. So one of the managers or the developers of the new hotel is named Mario Tocchi. Did you see
yeah,
that story?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, is it the
I did.
Is it the same?
The hair guy? I don't know.
Okay, well, that could be an assignment for you. And next week I want you to get a cut, maybe a blow dry, and then tell me if they're connected.
Mario Tocchi, you got to have your gold chains, right? Your blow dry, the whole thing.
that was back in your Bassine days. We know that.
That's right. The 2 days.
Frank Sennett. We'll talk again next week, do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I'll be there.
I appreciate it. All right, we've talked quite a lot, I think, with the Inno Boys and Suzanne Mushin as well, with this rash of sexual misconduct, not just allegations, but results. I mean, men losing their jobs because of the way they behaved in the workplace. And there was a New York Times Commission poll that's out. Philip Weiss is here from Seyfarth Shaw at Work. He brought me the results of this. 53% of women, 45% of men think a one-on-one dinner is inappropriate. 44% of women, 36% of men say that's the case when it comes to lunch. So that we have moved to this level now where a man and a woman in the workplace being together might be just on his face considered dangerous or inappropriate. Philip, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Good to be here.
Well, I don't know what to make of those numbers.
Yeah, and the two numbers that you cited are actually they're kind of telling, because one would understand at first glance that maybe a dinner has some sort of sub message. It's
right,
after
right.
work time, but a business lunch. And as you said, 44% of women have deemed that inappropriate in terms of participating alone with a man or driving in a car together, where 38% of women and almost a third of men deem that inappropriate. Well, you're driving to a business meeting, a sales call, or the business lunch together. How do you avoid that?
So is it that they consider it inappropriate, or they consider that it might put them in a risky situation?
Yeah. It's a little bit of both, and the poll doesn't break out exactly where the friction is or the objection lies. But certainly what we know from the results are, in some cases, people fear what might happen.
Right.
In other cases, they fear the perception of others if they spend too much time alone with one employee of the opposite gender. In fact, we helped a company where they really faced this perception issue head on. It was a consulting firm. Based on the East Coast, and a man and a woman, both key salespeople for this firm, were spotted repeatedly having lunch together at a nearby executive club.
Wait a minute. I know what this how the story ends.
Right. Well, that's what they thought.
Right.
And this club, Steve, also had sort of sleeping rooms for members. Which
Wait
only,
2 minutes.
It's building, right? So the point was this, the rumor mill of the now what was clearly a tryst, between two people who are not married to each other, married to others, overtook the workplace. It came out later, Steve, that this man and woman, all they were doing was spending time at the same club where they knew one of their potential sales leads, a really elusive and lucrative potential client, liked to lunch.
So they were doing what they needed, should have been doing.
That's right, waiting to find that moment to casually bump into him. And when they told people back at work, they were everyone said, well, why don't you just let us know?
Right.
Because we've actually been talking about this.
Right. Why don't you let us know? Because we've been gossiping about you.
That's right. Instead of working.
Okay. So I think I'm going to ask my first question again, maybe in a different way, because so the recommendation, I guess, would be to be mindful of this and to maybe modify behavior. But on the other side of that, it's like, well, why I don't think we should be forced to do that, or I don't think we should give in to that if we are behaving appropriately.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And in the context of the story that we just shared together, clearly, simply letting somebody else know back at work, a trusted confidant,
right.
If anybody asks you, if the rumor mill starts, just tamp it down. No details required. But you're right that in many cases, people want the opportunity to have FaceTime with a manager, whether that's a man or a woman.
Right, right.
To give a performance review to an employee, whether that's a man or a woman. To work together as a cohesive team.
I mean, I'm thinking now of like going to see a doctor when the nurse will be in the room.
Yeah.
You know, if there's that situation where there's always going to have to be a third party, are we moving toward that?
Well, clearly, this is not a case where we can say just don't do it, because you're going to actually curtail people's opportunities
right,
in the workplace.
Right.
It's more about at the margins, knowing where we want to pull back a bit. Sort of pick, if you're going to have a meeting one-on-one, don't spend several hours alone on the penthouse in the conference room with opaque windows. Maybe do it in the cafeteria. Maybe pick a location where people know where you are with glass windows. If you're a boss, don't force people of the opposite gender to spend an inordinate amount of time together. One of our clients actually, he tells people, how do you want to get to that meeting? Do you want to drive your own car? Great, I don't need you to save the gas money if you'd like to go on your
right.
own.
All right, well, I'm a little discouraged by where we are maybe.
Well, it's certainly, we don't have a baseline in terms of where the numbers were 10 years ago.
Right, right, right.
But I will tell you, in our training sessions, when we share these kinds of results, no one's willing to raise their hand and say, yes, I'm uncomfortable in front of the person who is making them uncomfortable. But after the fact, they come up to us in fairly large numbers, and they really reinforce those figures. So watching reactions, reading signals, and thinking about perceptions all can help.
Philip Weiss is the managing director of Cyfarth Shaw at Work. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.